And when we come back with Jim Elvidge, we're going to talk about parallel realities right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Jim, let's talk a little bit about parallel realities, how they exist, how many there could be out there. What are physicists speculating on?
Yeah, that's really an interesting area. We could probably do a whole show on parallel realities. It really depends who you talk to. The quantum mechanics guys, the guys who are peering deep into the atom, they'll talk about things like Hilbert space, which is this idea that one interpretation of quantum mechanics is that every, millions of times a second, zillions of times a second, a whole new universe gets created. I've heard Michio Kaku and others on the show talk about this kind of thing, and you know, it's a way of explaining some of the anomalies of quantum mechanics. So those theoretically are parallel realities in this Hilbert space, and you can't travel between them. They're again, theoretically, every time a decision is made, both things actually happen and both create a new universe. So if you think about the decision you made this morning on whether or not to have coffee or tea, well, in one universe you had coffee, and then the world went from there then on, and the other universe you had tea, and the world went from then on. But these decisions happen not at that macroscopic level. They happen really, really deeply at the quantum mechanical level. So the number of universes that gets created according to this theory is just, it's off the charts. It's crazy. So that's the way those guys, the physicists, the particle physicists, would think about parallel realities. The cosmologists have a different view, and the ones who believe in that we live in an infinite universe, infinite is that's quite a concept, George. I don't know about you, but I have a hard time with infinity. But if you believe,
I have a hard time with the Big Bang theory.
I do too. And by the way, the programmed reality gives kind of an interesting spin on the Big Bang theory. One of the problems with the Big Bang theory is that there appears to be no prime mover of the universe. Everything arose from nothing, doesn't have any grounding in objective reality or no grounding in physics. But a virtual reality can just boot itself up, right?
That's true.
So there's, you know, actually that, you know, that can be explained fairly easily with the programmed reality model. But yeah, back to the infinity idea. So cosmologists who believe that the universe is infinite, well, if the universe is infinite, that means that if you take any confined space within that infinite universe, the configuration of all the particles and all the stuff in that space is going to be a particular thing. Theoretically, there's somewhere else in the infinite universe where you have the exact same configuration of particles. It has to be the case if you really believe the universe is infinite. So cosmologists will talk about parallel realities as being, you know, you have a doppelganger. You've got another George Norrie interviewing Jim Elvidge some, you know, zillions of light years away just because the universe is infinite. And that's kind of a wild concept, but I have a bit of a hard time with the infinity idea.
Parallel universes and parallel realities, are these all one and the same?
Yeah, kind of. I think so. Another way to look at them is sort of multiple dimensions. There was a book written about 100 years ago now called Flatlanders. I don't know if you're familiar with that one.
No,
but it was interesting. It was, you know, what would your world be like if you lived in a two-dimensional world? So imagine you lived on the surface of kind of like a sheet of paper, but it extended infinitely in all directions. And all you could do is move north and south and east and west, right? You couldn't move up and down because you lived in a world of two dimensions. But there could be another dimension. So imagine a ball passing through your world. What would you see? You'd see when it first hit your piece of paper, if you will, you'd see a little spot on the paper. And then as it passed through the paper, that spot would grow into a circle that would increase in its diameter. And then as it went through the other side of the paper, you know, and I say paper, I mean your 2D world. When it went through the other side of the paper, that circle would decrease to a spot and disappear. So your view of what had happened is we got this anomalous spot appearing and disappearing, very strange. But in reality, there could have been, you know, another dimension there. You just have no awareness of it. So some people speculate that there are other dimensions, that we live in this three-dimensional space, but there's no reason why there couldn't be a fourth spatial dimension out there, or fifth or more. And there's an interesting way to think about this. If you imagine a grid, kind of a lattice of points in three dimensions, so up, down, in and out, left and right, all directions, you've got this grid of points. That's kind of what quantum mechanics says our space is like, you know, that things are kind of locked into this grid, and they every so often, you know, the configuration of stuff in the grid changes. So if you've got this grid, imagine that there's another grid exactly like it, but it's just moved a little bit further away from it. Well, that would be the fourth dimension. You know, moving through these different grids would be a fourth dimension, but the rules of physics may be such that you can't get from one to the other. Although some people are speculating that dark matter could be in one of these other grids, and that dark matter, that gravity actually flows a little bit between the dimensions. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So that could explain why we can sense dark matter a little bit, but not the way we sense our normal matter. Another view of parallel realities is Tom Campbell's, and you think of an astral plane or a non-physical matter reality, heaven, whatever you want to call it. It's thought space. And within that environment is a physical matter reality like ours. But somewhere else, there's another physical matter reality, which is a parallel one. Can we get from one to the other? According to him, according to people who do, according to some shamans, and according to people who experience DMT, according to Graham Hancock and many others who have experienced, you know, some astral travel, you can get from one reality to another, and they're different. So yeah, parallel reality is a very rich topic, and a lot of different ways to look at them.
We may travel that way through interstellar space.
Yeah, could be. Maybe all we know right now is how to travel in our three-dimensional reality, but maybe some Einstein will come along and say, and by the way, the string theorists say that we live in an 11-dimensional space. So if they're right, there are other dimensions out there. Maybe somebody will come along and figure out how to navigate between them, and we'll find all kinds of other realms.
Let's take some calls here with you, Jim. While we've got them, let's go to George in Apollo, Pennsylvania. Hey, George, go ahead.
Okay, Jim, I got to ask you a question, although I have to preface a little bit in order for you to think that I'm not totally crazy.
I never think that, George.
Working on an anti-gravity-type device in the process of seeing it, magnetic fields. My observation is that magnetic fields, when they start, can be multiple, and they continue in their various directions. But in the process, to make this thing work, you have an electron reversal. Because of the speed, the actual spin, they kind of overlap like in a movie, but when you do it, you wind up having these reversals all happen at the same time. So now if the electron's light coming in and then and it reverses back out, it may have a canceling effect, and the result is you've got a black hole. So you can have many black holes, but if you can do it action at a distance, bring them all together at the same time, then you got a big black hole.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
You could be onto something, George. It sounds a little bit beyond my area of expertise, but I know that some of the people who are experimenting with free energy types of devices are basing it on the idea that there is an electrical and a magnetic field pervading our space, and that as electrons and things pass through that, they generate energy. So you know, some interesting ideas there for sure.
You take a look, Jim, at new technologies. What's out there these days?
Oh, there's some cool stuff, George. They recently legalized autonomous cars in California and also in Nevada.
Oh, yeah. Strange, isn't it?
Isn't it? Yeah, Google's been having these autonomous cars driving around for a while. I think they tend to have somebody in them to make sure that that it doesn't go haywire. But what a concept! And you know, ultimately, it kind of makes some sense. You know, people are not infallible. Computers are not infallible either. But you know, based on some rules and using radar and sonar and computer vision and things like that, they actually may someday be safer to drive in that way. I mean, look at the planes. Most planes now are automated from takeoff to landing. So, yeah, that's one. There was a company called Aerofex in California that has a working prototype of a hover bike that looks kind of like the speeder in
Back to the Future?
In Star Wars.
Okay.
The one that kind of...
Okay.
Yeah, that hovered above the ground. So that's pretty cool. In bionics, we've got a company, NanoRetina, that recently created a bionic eye that has 576 pixels in it for people who are blind. And the price point on these things is coming down. It's somewhere around $60,000, I think, for it. It's a 30-minute operation, and you can start to see. So it's a really amazing things coming along in the technology.
We go to Travis now, Virginia Beach, Virginia, east of the Rockies. Travis, welcome to the show.
Hello, Mr. Norrie. First off, I'd like to say thank you for bringing this information to the
masses. You are very welcome.
And one question that I got for Jim, do you have any type of theoretical whatever on autonomous sensory meridian response? Have you heard of that? And I'm going to end it here.
Can you tell me a little bit more, Travis?
Okay, autonomous sensory meridian response is the sensation, the feeling that you actually get that you can create in the back of your mind, an actual tingling sensation that I could create in my own head without any type of hallucinogens, any type of anything, no drugs or anything like that. Or it's just a sensation that I can do when I meditate. It's a sensation that I get in the back of my mind when I'm in deep meditation. And I'm just wondering, have you ever heard of that or...
Yeah, actually, I have a little bit. It sounds, there are kind of two ways to go on this. One is that it sounds similar to, I've heard that people just before they go into an out-of-body experience,
okay,
they have a buzzing feel.
Well, see, more like what I'm experiencing is, okay, go ahead. I'm sorry, I'm not going to interrupt you.
No, that's okay. Go ahead.
Well, more like what I'm feeling, it's more of a meditation. It's not like... It's something that I can do at will. So yeah. I'm just wondering what it is. Have you? And when I do experience this, I have the day after I do experience this. It's almost like I have a sense of calmness or
tranquility.
Concentration, you know, and it's very odd.
Well, Tom Campbell says that as you become more proficient at meditation, you are getting in touch with your true consciousness, and maybe your true consciousness is what you're experiencing there. You know, you're tuning out the rest of the world and experiencing that thing that is somewhere else that we talked about earlier in the program.
Jim, I want to spend some time with you here for a moment to talk about time travel.
Mm-hmm.
So many people think that it's not possible. What do you think?
I think it's possible, but maybe not in the way that we think of, you know, Back to the Future, where you're in this world and traveling to the past and changing things and, you know, dealing with the grandfather paradox and all that kind of stuff. Consciousness travel to the past. I think that it's very possible that there is a record of everything that's ever happened, you know, the Akashic Record or whatever you want to call it. In the programmed reality model, it's a data store of the history of the universe, perhaps. So that allows you to go back and replay things or experience things if you can learn to travel in that way. And some people claim to have been able to do that, to be able to go back into the past and experience things very lucidly, like they're rewinding a tape or a DVD or something like that and actually experiencing them. So it's a different kind of travel, but it still maybe achieves the same purpose, unless you're trying to go back into the past and kill off Hitler before World War II. I don't know that we're ever going to be able to do that. The future is different. I think it requires a whole new way of thinking, in a way that's consistent with these reports of timelessness that you hear about in other realms. People who have NDEs say there was no time, there was no sense of time, everything was happening all at once. So maybe in our reality, we have a concept of time that is really, it's part of our physical reality. It makes us able to experience physical reality. When you get outside of this physical reality, you no longer have the need for that time, and you can experience things simultaneously. So what if you're able to pop out into this other realm, look up the river, if you were, and come back, you know, get a sense of what's happening in the future? I don't know.
What if in 1,000 years we developed time travel?
Mm-hmm.
Is it then conceivable that it's possible that if they came back here, that maybe they are here right now?
Yeah, it could be. You know, that's one of the things. There have been people who claim they're from the future. I haven't really investigated that too much. It sounds
we've had a few on the program.
Yep, sounds a bit of a stretch to me, because none of them can really tell you who's going to win the ball game tomorrow
or the lottery numbers or things like that.
Exactly, but the idea of consciousness moving around in time does make some sense to me, and I think there is actually some evidence that's possible.
We shall find out one day, won't we?
Yeah, we should, and that'll be pretty interesting. I think some of the research that's being done in these areas, I give so much credit to the researchers who are willing to step outside of their, you know, sort of approved...
Outside of the box
and try something that they may get chastised for or whatever. It takes a lot of courage when that's your bread and butter, you know, and you're pushing the limits of it. It's interesting to me, because something like string theory, honestly, there's no real evidence for it. It's as much of a, you know, mathematical theory, a hypothesis, as anything else. And yet it's okay for people to pursue string theory, but it's not okay for them to pursue, for example, precognition studies or something like that.
Right.
And I just think that's just closed-minded.
Where did we get your book, The Universe Solved?
Well, currently you can get it on the website. I sign the ones that people order off the website. We will be probably stopping that in a couple weeks, because our e-commerce provider is discontinuing, and it's just too difficult to get another one. So, but it is available on Amazon as well. A lot of people buy the book on Amazon, and it'll be in ebook format in another month or so.
Super, Jim. Good reviews, too. We're going to come back, take more phone calls here on Coast to Coast AM. Those of you on hold, we'll get right back to you. Don't touch your dial. We're going to continue with your phone calls next hour as well with Jim Elvidge as we talk about his work, The Universe Solved. Back in a moment with more calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back, Jim Elvidge with us, your phone calls as well. Jim, how did you get involved with all this?
It's just one of those things, George, that, kind of progressed. I actually wanted to write a book about relativity back in 2006, which was the 100-year anniversary of Einstein's theory. I had some different ideas about relativity, and as I started doing that, I came across some concepts and some ideas about the nature of reality, which seemed to me to be a bigger story. So in my research about relativity, I was learning more about things like, you know, the quantum froth, you know, the discrete nature of our reality, you know, according to quantum mechanics. And it just made sense to me that feels an awful lot like a computational mechanism. You know, if our space is quantized, it's kind of like the way we model things in a computer program. And if our time is quantized, it's kind of the way a computer clicks through different states of its software. So the whole, you know, light bulb went off, and I thought, my goodness, you know, there's a much more interesting book here in this kind of idea.
Doesn't it still baffle you, it does me, how all this was put together?
It does. Yeah, it definitely does. It seems so big, doesn't it?
Yes. And so much order.
Yep. And that's one of the things I find fascinating is this whole idea of entropy. Second law of thermodynamics is getting a resurgence of interest these days. Scientists who are in that field say that we're constantly moving toward a more disordered state. Well, you might say that our society kind of feels that way, but if you look at, you know, evolution and what's happened to our planet over the years, and you look at the structures that we build and what we do with our bodies and that kind of thing, you have to feel like, no, there's some other process going on here. We're really evolving to a more ordered state in some ways, and then maybe a disordered state in other ways. And it's very, very interesting. I kind of think of the whole mystery as being like an onion, and we peel away a layer of onion now and then. Some of the scientific revolutions in the 20th century peeled away another layer of the onion. We got a little closer. We looked a little further out. We learned a little bit more about space-time and a little bit more about quanta and things like that. But there's still a lot more layers in that onion, and it's going to take us a long time to peel those out. And I really think that once we get to the end of it, it's going to be data, rules, and consciousness.
And, you know, how can the universe... And this is kind of a rhetorical question, but how can the universe have so much order, so much, you know, organization, and just be a fluke?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, that you know, you bring up one of the other really odd anomalies about everything. I'm sure you've thought about these too. Is the idea that it's so perfectly tuned that there are some.
It's a symphony better than anything written by man.
It really is. It really is. There are some constants in math and physics equations that if they were off by just a tiny, tiny, tiny fraction, the universe would have collapsed. But they're not. They're perfect.
Sean is truck driving in Washington, D.C. on the wild card line. Sean, go ahead.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, Sean. Thank you.
All right. Hey, I got a question. Your guest, I'm sorry I forgot your name, but you were mentioning earlier in the show that, generally speaking, I guess matter is all the same when you get down to the stuff is all the same when you get down to the atomic level.
Mm-hmm.
My question is this: would it be possible if you match the frequencies harmonically and electrical? Would it be possible to pass two objects between each other without causing harm to object A or object B?
Interesting question, Jim Elvidge.
Yeah, I think there's something to that. The idea of frequency as a dimension is really valid. Frequency means a vibrational level, you know, how fast something is vibrating. And two things that are vibrating at different frequencies don't resonate. You know, they don't, you know, from radio theory, they don't... they're not kind of coherent together. So there is some idea that things at different frequencies, vibrating at different frequencies, might not be able to interact with each other in some way. But you know, on the other hand, if you kind of looked at a string or something that was actually vibrating and tried to run that through another string that's vibrating at a different frequency, they would probably collide. But at a deeper level, it could be a dimension that that reality has.
You know, we've gotten some calls, very interesting, fascinating calls, Jim, of two people who might be in car accidents, right? and they see one car coming right at them. There's no way you're going to get out of it. And they would say that both vehicles somehow blended into each other and out again with no accident. Is there something in the cosmos that might move around those atoms and molecules to prevent that accident from happening?
Well, in the data, is everything theory? Absolutely possible. If you kind of think about, again, the rules that we talk about here, are you familiar with the game of life, George? Have you ever seen
that? Oh, yeah, I used to play that game.
Yeah, it's really a kind of a cool concept. You have this little grid, and there are some rules about when the grids change state, and it creates these interesting little patterns. Well, these are the kind of rules that create things that are just based on data and some very, very simple rules, but when you step way back from it, it can be very complex. Well, you know, in a case of two cars running on each other, you know, you would think, of course, they're going to collide, but when you get deep down into it, there could very well be some rule in the system that says, that's not ready to happen at this point, and we're going to allow these things to pass through each other, because at the end of the day, there is no stuff. It's just data, right?
Next up, we go to Brentwood, California, west of the Rockies. Jim, thank you. Go ahead.
Hello, Jim.
Hello, Jim.
Can you hear me?
Jim, go ahead.
Yeah, okay. I'm calling about your theory of black matter. I assume you read Hawking's book on the universe in a nutshell.
I'm familiar with that. I didn't read it cover to cover, kind of scanned that one.
Well, he gives 10 models of different size universes, all shaped like black holes, and he claims that only one of them is livable, and you have to have certain initial conditions before you can create that. So he claims there's an infinity of bad universes surrounding our livable universe.
Right.
But I've got a new theory on that the curvature alone may explain dark matter, that the curvature, you know, Riemann's equations were used for Einstein's general relativity. And so as Riemann pointed out, the curvature alone determines its dynamics. So if the universe changes its curvature, its periods inside of the huge black hole universe would have different periods. So this would affect galaxies the way they travel, and it may give the illusion of dark matter. So it may be the curvature alone may explain dark matter, changes in the curvature.
Yeah, certainly an interesting theory, Jim, and it's not too dissimilar from some of the others that I've heard about, you know, effectively, you know, the rules of space-time or the physics of space-time not being described quite perfectly with Einstein's equations. The only thing I would say, though, is take a look at, they've now published some 3D representations of dark matter in the universe, and you'll see that it's like filaments. It looks like, I don't know, when you look out into the sky at the Milky Way, you can see, you know, kind of patterns of the Milky Way. I would think that if there's a curvature anomaly, that dark matter would be very, very smooth and continuous throughout space, and not in this kind of clumpy manner that they've determined that it's in. And that's one reason why I think that it really is some form of matter.
Let's go to Manuel, Stockton, California. Hi, Manuel. Thank you.
George, always a hoot.
it is.
Mr. Elvidge, glad to talk to you. Hey, you guys had me rolling on the floor with that autonomous car thing. I was wondering, hey, are they going to program these things to autonomously cut you off on the freeway?
Yeah, or road rage you?
Yeah. No, my actual thought is, I wonder if you're familiar with, let's go back to Stephen Hawking. His idea of matter falling into a black hole is that the information never gets lost. The matter might be obliterated, but not the information. So my thought is, what if we aren't the original? What if our universe has fallen to some kind of enormous black hole, and we're what's left. We're the information. That might explain why there's no dark energy. It's this, it's like voodoo economics that we can't find, and maybe entropy also, because as our information, as we decay, information eventually decays. What do you think?
Well, I think there's a really interesting element in that whole idea of, and this is Leonard Susskind's idea of being a holographic projection on the surface of a black hole. There's actually a YouTube video where he kind of explains it pretty well. And it's, you know, I had a little trouble with it myself, but what's interesting to me about it is that they're talking about information. And again, even people like Hawking and Leonard Susskind are treating information as if it is reality. So the idea of data on the surface of a black hole representing our universe is one more example of physicists coming to the conclusion that our world, our universe, is run by data. I personally don't see that, because I don't think you need a black hole to explain a lot of what we have, the, you know, the rules and the experiences and consciousness and that kind of thing. I don't think you need that black hole. And if we were really a projection on the surface of a black hole, where's the evidence of the existence of that black hole? So while the whole, you know, it's one element in science where they are treating information and, you know, as if it's a fundamental constituent of the universe, which I think is really cool, because it's just supporting, you know, the ideas I've been talking about for a long time. But I'm not sure that I find a lot that's really appealing in the holographic black hole idea.
Jim, do you think we will be able to travel through space through wormholes?
Again, I'm not so sure. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility. I think Kip Thorne even came up with a theoretical wormhole creator, but it requires a lot of exotic matter of the sort that doesn't exist. Interestingly, he did that back in the 80s or early 90s, and since then I remember seeing somebody that wrote a paper on kind of what he was talking about, you know, the ability to create a wormhole, but it could be done with millions of times less exotic matter than what Kip Thorne came up with. So, yeah, the ideas are out there, and I don't discount anything, George. You know, if we look back 100 years ago and you know, thought about the things that we're doing today, people would say you're crazy.
Yeah, they probably would. Let's take a few more calls, then we'll come back next hour. Aiden in Queens, New York. Welcome to the show, Aiden. Go ahead, sir.
Thank you. I enjoy your show very much.
Well, thank
George,
you.
And Jim, something that I want to address, which you were speaking scientifically, to us Roman Catholics, is very basic. When Christ was on earth, he talked about a lot of this stuff, but people were not listening. I come from a place called Ballintubber Abbey in the west coast of Ireland, and Christ actually had conversations with a lady at that area, at that church in that area. And a lot of the things you have spoken about, he explained to her. And the reason for his visiting her and passing information along was to let the people know that God is alive and well and loves the people and wants the people in return to love each other. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
I can. Indeed, yes.
I beg your pardon?
Yes, I can.
Do you have any questions on that matter?
No, I actually like what you're saying. It sounds to me, and I don't know, you know, how certain this event was, but there are definitely people who, perhaps like Christ, like others who are prophets, who have been able to tap into the, you know, deeper nature of reality than the rest of us do, for one reason or another, and they have a knowledge perhaps that's greater than than what we have. I'm personally a little jealous of that. I'd like to be able to experience those things for myself. All I can go by is what I learn and what I read and kind of synthesizing all of this information. But what your story, along with many, many others from different walks of life and different cultures and different, even within the scientific realm, what people are seeing in their near-death experiences, there's a real confluence of thought there, which is that consciousness is about love and compassion, and the evolution of consciousness, and this is one of the things that Tom Campbell says also, the evolution of consciousness, the whole purpose of it is, love and compassion. So what, Aidan, what you said, that Christ said, sounds very similar to that.
It does indeed. Jim, you know, when you were talking about some of the work that you were doing about relativity, what would Einstein have done today with modern computers? Would he have changed his theories at all?
I don't know. You know, maybe not. And the reason I say that is just sort of a gut reaction is that Einstein, I'm so impressed with Einstein. He was just an out-of-the-box thinker. And sometimes computers make that hard. You know, you have to get away from stuff. You have to quiet your mind to really think out of the box. And you know, being presented with masses of data creates a lot of noise in your mind and a lot of threads and a lot of things going on. And Einstein had some ideas with some clarity that nobody else had. So maybe not. You know, maybe the computers wouldn't have helped him. It's not like he was an experimental researcher so much. He was more a theorist, and that just came from thinking, right?
Well, it sure did. Jim, we're going to take this quick break, and we're going to come back with a final hour of phone calls with you here on Coast to Coast AM. So those of you, again, on hold, we will get right to you. I know some of you have been on hold for a long, long time, but we shall. Jim's website, theuniversesolved.com. Ours, coasttocoastam.com, or you can send me an email at george@coast2to, coasttocoastam.com. We'll be back in a moment.